Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 33 of the Finger Lakes Golfer Podcast on FingerLakes1.tv and YouTube, recorded live on Monday evening, July 27th, 2015. I'm your host, Jim Sinacropi, joined alongside my co-host, the Big Easy Bob LaPrade, and we'll have Dennis Leahy back from Seneca Falls Country Club here in studio with us for the next hour, where we'll recap and update some of the topics from the podcast so far this season, being it's about halfway through the golf season, halfway through our podcasting season. We'll go back and review some of the stuff we kind of talked about quickly and see if any of our opinions have changed. Bobby's pick of the week is a new driver, and Dennis also has an interesting new driver on order that he'll tell us about. Local golf news, a look at the New York State men's amateur results, as well as Jason Day's win at the Canadian Open. And for this week's Zen Tip, we'll talk about the two-man scramble at Seneca Falls Country Club on Sunday and how my partner Bob and I managed through a tough round but ended up with a decent finish. So let's welcome our guests here into the studio. First off, Bob, how's it going? You got a little head cover there.
Yeah.
Over your left shoulder. It's a little John Daly.
It's my buddy.
Your boy bought you that, right?
Yeah.
A couple years ago, yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I can recognize your bag across like a sea of carts pre-tournament.
Right.
Is from that.
Nice.
It actually is pretty easy to spot.
Right.
And welcome back, Dennis. Also a guest this morning in the same studio on the Weber This Week show, now back for a nightcap. Of course, Dennis is no stranger to the Finger Lakes Golfer Podcast. He's been on multiple times. And welcome back, Dennis.
Thanks for having me.
So, fellas, going to get a little hot up here tonight, as it tends to this time of year. The air conditioning has to come down because of the noise here in the studio. But, hey, I'm wearing a sweet Link Soul T-shirt, which is, what kind of cotton is this, Dennis?
It's Pima cotton.
Cotton. I'm telling you, it's like just, you don't even feel like you're wearing anything.
What's Pima cotton?
It's just light, free as well. Yeah, it's light. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's really very, very comfortable T-shirt.
Well,
and
I'll tell you, like the one I wore this week a couple times. You know, after work, you come home, you put it on. I liked it. I liked it a lot. Yeah. Very comfortable. Very comfortable.
So we actually got some gear from Link Soul, and next week we're in Retson. We'll talk about it. We'll show what we got. We'll talk about the golf shirts. We've worn them a few times during the round, so we'll give you a nice Link Soul review. But honestly, it's one of the few times I've put on a T-shirt, and I said, "Wow, you know, this feels great." So, like I said, last episode of July, a little more than halfway through the season for both our golf season and our podcast season. And, you know, I guess one of the big things that we talked about a lot this year was golf balls, like knockoff golf balls and the Vice ball. And, you know, I've played the Vice exclusively all season long.
Yes, you have.
Got that sweet logo deal when we had the code for the podcast for free logoing, and the folks over at Vice Golf were kind enough to give us nice discount, so I got gave us a couple free dozen.
Right, yep.
So I've been playing it exclusively, and I still contend that it plays as well as a Pro V1, the Vice Pro Plus. But there is a drawback that, you know, I hadn't really discovered at the time of doing the review. It's that I noticed that they don't hold their bright white it very long. Like, you got about one round in you.
Yeah, I think that's something that Bob and I had talked about. They don't seem to cut like, say, a Pro V or like the old Pentas or like
maybe a little more durable.
Now a Tour Preferred. I say they're more durable, but in unison, it almost looks they kind of turn gray, almost like a range ball that
has
been hit. You know,
I think they get grass stained or something, and it doesn't come out.
Which I guess if that's how the ball, you know, ages, that's better than like the older Pro Vs where they'd cut and then you can't really even play them. So you can still play them, but that definitely was something that I noticed.
Yeah,
completely agree.
Especially when it's sitting in the fairway next to another one. I'm driving up from 15, 20 yards away, I can say, well, there's my ball and there's my playing partner who's playing the Pro V's ball.
Right.
Just from like the color. That being said, when they're as inexpensive as the vice balls are, and when you have as many as I have, I'm pulling one out sometimes every nine, a new one, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I guess when you, even when, if you're using them at that frequency, they're probably still more affordable than the Pro-V.
Yeah, but what's the big deal if you play a couple rounds with one ball and it's a little discolored?
Well, you know, it's, I've always, and that's one reason why I looked at the vice balls. I've always been a guy that wants, on that first tee of a new round, I want a brand new ball.
Sure.
And if that ball gets scuffed up or somewhere mid-round, I don't want to play with it anymore.
Right.
And if you throw another one in the pond or one in the woods, you're talking about $15 to $20 worth of golf balls in a round that you're going through.
Right.
And you're playing three times a week. It's a real expense. Like, it's literally, you know, it's literally a $120 a month golf ball budget if you're playing Pro Vs where you want to play a new one every round.
Yeah. Yep.
So, I don't know what I'd do next year, because that is disappointing, the discolorization. But then when I thought about it, oh, I'll just grab another one. I got 500 of these things.
Yeah.
So the Vice golf ball, still a big thumbs up, but just wanted to buyer beware. After about a round, it's definitely gonna discolor a little bit. And I don't know if that's something that's true for all these knockoff balls. They're not necessarily knockoffs; they're just not name brand, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bobby, you went to an Aim Point Express putting class back in the spring. And since then, you've been out there on the green doing, I tell you, during the two-man scramble yesterday, right? Bobby's on 15, Bobby's doing a little aim point. And he was probably so engrossed in his aim point where he's standing on the line trying to feel it that he didn't notice that he was standing like maybe 10 feet away from one of our playing partners who was kind of just standing there, and he didn't know you do the aim point, and you were like standing there like right in front of him, you know, but you like almost, it was just really weird. I looked at it, you know what I'm talking about?
But he was looking at me.
You don't remember it? No, yeah. I don't even know if maybe he noticed. He probably was like, why is this guy standing in the middle of the green looking at me, like squaring up to me? He should be worried about his putt.
Right, yeah.
You know, but you were, and you've been sticking with the technique for reading the greens. And,
yes.
And anything that you've learned since using it over the past 2 months?
I think I'm becoming more and more calibrated to it. I've missed a lot more putts on the high side, which is a good thing when you really think about it, because a lot of us will normally miss it on the low side, and it's that there's no chance at it, right? It's like if you're short, you don't have a chance, but if you're missing on the high side, there's always that chance.
Now, so, have you made more putts though?
I would say I've made more longer putts for sure, absolutely.
That you would have missed if you just read it in the
right. I would have missed on the low side, or rush the left side of the cup. I think I've made more putts than I normally would without the technique.
Now, have you played with Bob Dennis since he's been using this technique?
I don't believe so.
I don't believe so.
Yeah, he just kind of sum it up. You feel the break with your feet. They train you to tell by just standing near your line with your feet about a foot and a half apart to feel, oh, that's a 1 degree right slope, or that's a 3 degree, or whatever it is. And then there's some formula that you use, Bob, where you stand behind the line, and depending on the slope mathematics, you will look at your line like this, and sometimes like this.
Yep.
And
it's very simple. If you feel 2 degrees slope, it's two fingers, three. Where things vary a little bit, and you have to make adjustments if there's more break at the beginning of your round, what you do is you shorten the extension of your fingers and you bring it almost to kind of almost like a 90 degrees. Maybe it's in between. You have to kind of calibrate yourself during the round if the break is more. So if you pull your fingers closer to you, obviously it's going to show more break than if you had them fully extended. But that's where you start. You start fully extended.
So, real quick, somebody wants to learn more about it. First of all, then go back a couple episodes, and just if you're on our website at fingerlakes1.tv/golfpod, search for Aim Point and pull up that episode. Or is there any place else online you direct somebody?
I don't know the name of the website, but if you go to Google or one of the search providers out there and search for Aim Point Express, you can find a database of certified instructors that are out there. I went to Turning Stone and did my class there. But there certainly could be, if we have viewers outside the area, there could be some place very close to you to go ahead and get the class.
Real quick, while I'm still with you, what about the Bionic Golf Glove? Shortly after Bob's pick of the week was the Bionic Golf Glove, which was kind of a glove with some
ribs
to help you for your pleasure, for your hand's pleasure, as it held the golf club.
Yeah.
Shortly after the review, we realized it's not USG a sanction unless you have a medical condition like arthritis.
Yeah, you need to have arthritis. It needs to be... unfortunately, it's a great glove. It's very, very comfortable. It feels good in the hands, but it's I've relegated that glove to range work. So I use it for the range. That way you don't wear out your normal glove that you're doing your normal play with. So that's where that – but I've found it's very durable, very durable glove. Unfortunately, can't use it if you're going to be playing any events that you don't want to break the rules in. Unless you have arthritis, then I guess you can use it. But very nice glove. I like it a lot.
Well, I also earlier this year took a look at the Adidas Adicross golf shoes. I bought a pair. They were my new pair of golf shoes this year. I've worn them almost exclusively, except for when it's been rainy conditions. And it's one of my first true sneaker-style golf shoes that don't have, like, the spider golf spikes, soft spikes in them. And I haven't noticed a difference in terms of slipping. I mentioned that the bottom gets clogged when it gets wet because of the type of the Gripmore technology. It's just it's almost like mini soft spikes under there, and it gets clogged up. You got to clear it out a little bit when it's wet. But I love them. They're very comfortable. I look forward to being able to wear them every time I get into my trunk and get carted up. I love putting them on. And just like any sneaker, they look like an Adidas sneaker almost. They start to look like a sneaker. You know, some of the creases get a little dirt in them. But, you know, they still look fairly new after, 2.5 months of play, and probably a good 50 rounds. Maybe did I play that much?
Maybe.
So, big thumbs up for the Adicross. That hasn't changed. Now, Bob, you also reviewed a swing app analysis, a swing analysis app called Swing Pro. Mm-hmm. Remember that one? You still use that?
I haven't used it in quite a while just because we're in the kind of second half of the season. I don't like to change my swing much. So, that's if everybody remembers, that's the device that attaches just below the grip on your club, and you sync that up with your Bluetooth device, whether it be an iPad, Android device, phone, whatever. You take some swings. It gives you quite a bit of feedback. I plan on using it more in the winter, but I did use it for the first, I'd say, quarter of the season, just to try to get things in good swing shape.
And we also did almost a full episode with Doug Brown on face-on putting. Now, Dennis, you've seen Doug putting with his new style of putter, the face-on putting. And, I can report on his behalf that he's sticking with it. I mean, that's the way he putts now. What are your thoughts on the face-on technique?
I played with him on Sunday, so I got to see that. Oh, that's right.
He was your partner.
For the first time. He seems comfortable with it. You know, The putts that he seems to, I don't want to speak for him, but it seems tough when you're just in the fringe or, the longer putts just seem.
He says that doesn't bother him.
It looks like. I don't know. How could it not? That's at least from just bringing it back, just the more that, the short ones he looks really comfortable with, even 10 footers he looks really comfortable with, but anytime you're swinging it back that far, in my mind at least, there's just. It would be tough to
control the distance or control keep the distance strike or consistent.
From a short distance, I could see myself doing it.
I really like to sometimes.
No problem. But the long ones, I would be completely lost.
Well, you know, the face-on putting, he basically put both your toes at the line. You don't straddle the line, but you put your right foot near the line, very close to the line, and then you hold your – it's a special putter. You hold it like this, and you swing it back and forth.
Yep.
And Bob and I played with Doug on Wednesday night, and we commented that it seems like he had trouble controlling distance. Like, the direction was almost spot on every time. But, boy, he was really short on some and really long on some. Not going to happen to anybody, but I think that he needs to stick with this longer so he can truly get a good feel.
Right, yeah. I think his line was spot on that whole night. It's just – and it could have been an off night for him. But, I mean, he was hitting that line pretty solid the whole night.
Definitely get a lot of second looks in his bag. You know, he's got a great bag. He's got all beautiful Titleist gloves. Yeah. Yeah. And then sticking out the top is this thing.
Ice cube.
Yeah. You know, so everyone's looking at everyone's bag walking around on Sunday. Oh, what's everybody got? You know,
it's
kind of a little out of place.
Well, but, I've tried the putter out on the practice screen. And actually, when he first pulled it out on 14, when we were playing with him that day, and it felt very comfortable to me.
Yeah, more natural. You can see the line.
It felt natural.
You're behind the ball looking down the line.
Right, yeah.
That's what's most intriguing to me about it.
Yeah.
And I will say this. I think that the technique he's using is good, but I don't think that putter is a great putter. It's like a big piece of acrylic. You tell me it couldn't have an insert or of some type that would make it easier? It's just a block of acrylic, you know?
Yeah. Do you think he'd have better performance with something that's more traditional? What we see on the end of our shafts.
Yeah, but on the face-on
type of shaft
alignment.
Even was that a counterbalance? Does that have a weight at the end of the grip? I don't remember.
I don't know.
I can imagine that putter, even something like Scotty makes a couple counterbalance options. I feel like that would be something really cool to look at for him. Because it just seems that would even help him even more anchor it. On that line, and then let the pendulum kind of come through.
Kudos to him for sticking to it.
I've seen him make some good putts with it.
Yeah, I'm actually, every time I play with him, a little jealous that I don't have one of those so I can go to it, because I'm putting terrible, and we'll get to that in just a second. But Bob, you got a new putter this year too. You got the Odyssey Works Versa 2 Ball Fang Putter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still your putter, although I did see you go to something else at one point for like one round maybe.
No.
You sure you didn't pull something back out?
No, normally you do see me do that about this time of year, but no.
You're loving the putter, and it is a great putter. Yeah. It looks great.
I did change grips. That's probably what you're thinking about. I went to like a number two, what do you call them, the fat grips?
Super stroke
grip, and then I just stuck with it for about four rounds, and I decided not.
Took it off.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Yeah, but you've been, honestly, we talked about the way you're reading greens, and we talked about the way your new putter now, and you've been putting great this year all year long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, noticeably better than the past and more consistent, and I'd say you're the best putter inside. I'd say you're the best putter from 15 to 20 feet at the club.
Well, thank you, but I'm very frustrated right now, especially with the last three or four rounds, because it just seems like I'm burning cups. I'm not.
Well, that goes with the territory of being a great putter.
Yeah.
You know, you got to keep stroking through there. If you're burning cups, then you're not too far off, and eventually you're going to make, you know, you're going to start making them, and then you'll burn some more cups, but it'll be cyclical.
Yeah, let's hope so. Let's hope it comes around.
My problem, just to put the final recap on the look back at the first half of the season, was we did a couple shows just focusing on why I can't make short putts. We did one whole show, but we've talked about it since then. And I missed three putts inside of 3 feet on the last two times I played.
Mm-hmm.
You know, each round, that's three shots that you just shouldn't have. I shot three shots higher because I missed a putt. You know, like that. One, mm-hmm. Somewhere in that range. And it's crazy. I feel comfortable from 15 feet, but of course you're not expected to make that every time, so, or even half the time, really. Or even 30% of the time, for that matter, if you're going by statistics. But, I got to figure something out again. I thought I had it solved, but it's the worst. It's the yips. You know, I have the yips. When I get close enough where it should be a definite make,
mm-hmm.
I don't have confidence. I'm lined up. No matter how hard I try, to set marks and line up, and you want me to read a book by Dave Stockton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Unconscious Putting.
Unconscious Putting. I think it's a good book, a good book for you. And also, I'd like to mention that when I have putting woes, or I feel like I'm having putting woes, the best thing I've done in the past is totally ignore it. So, and that's not easy. So when you talk about missing putts like this, Jim, or whatever,
yeah, just
it's
like
not
that.
It's not easy to walk off the green and go, oh my God, I just missed that. But you have to do everything in your power to forget that and say, you know what, I'm going to work through this. It's going to go away.
Yeah, normally I do that, but it keeps coming back. I mean, normally, you know, I could have the worst putting day ever, and on the 18th green, be like 100% sure I'm going to make a 20-footer, just 100% sure. Go mm-hmm. into it with confidence, and then maybe miss, you know, 2 feet right, but it wasn't for lack of really believing I could.
Mm-hmm.
But it's these, you know, the short ones. You miss one, and you're like, all right, big deal, you know, and play on. And then you miss another one, and you're like, you know, now that's an issue. And then you miss another one, and now you're just so down on yourself.
Well, if you read some articles about batters in baseball that have hit slumps, and the mind takes over, and the slump becomes a lot longer than it really needs to be because, you know, they start messing with their technique. They start messing with the way they stand in the batter's box. They start messing with, you know, how high they hold the bat, how they release the bat, how they release their body. So, you know.
Or they run out and buy a new putter.
Well, that's true.
Which
true.
Is what I did. I got the Scottsdale, one of the Ping Scottsdale putters, and got it fitted at Dick's, which is also a callback, Bob, to us. Mm-hmm. To you had your Fang pit fitted at Dick's and told us all about it back on episode 2 or 3 of this season.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I went out and tried a couple putters, just wanted a different look. Got this Ping at Dick's, has a little nice insert, had it fitted just like you did, Bob, feel comfortable with it, took it out, missed 3 3-footers. and I spent some time on the putting green, too, with it first, but, yeah, I almost wanted to immediately go back, because sometimes mm-hmm. that's all I need. I saw something different, now I'll go back to my Spalding TPM blade putter, and but.
Can I ask you a question, Jim?
Yeah.
When you're on the putting green, how do you feel about your putting after you spend 15, 20 minutes out there putting?
It depends. I usually play a game. I'm not really going to drill myself too much anymore, although I might have to resort to some type of drilling. But, you know, I like the drill where you put 4 balls around the green at like 3 to 4 feet, just knock them in, and then do it again, try to make like 20 in a row. I like that drill. Mm-hmm. But what I've been doing just for convenience and ease is I take 2 balls with me, and I putt around the green, mm-hmm. and then I go around the green the other way to all the 4 or 5 pins in the putting green, and then I go cross the green and cross again, and I just keep score.
Yeah.
You know, how many over or under? They're all par twos.
Right.
And Tuesday night, which was the second night in a row that I went down there for a half hour, 45 minutes, and did this, when I quit, I was 2 under par.
Mm-hmm.
And that's anything under par, and that drill's great, mm-hmm. you know. So I was rolling putts. I was knocking home 2, 3, 4 footers to save the pars.
Yeah.
Didn't make them all. And then I drained occasional, you know, 20 to 30 foot putter. Our putting green's just not that big.
Yeah, but my point to asking that question, that goes right in line with Dave Stockton's book. And I'm not going to give you the rest of the story. Just read his book.
Yeah, I want to download an audio version, but I'll grab the, it's only, you said 90 pages, right?
It's 90 pages.
And then we'll we'll do a little something on that. So, all right, let's quickly get to the PGA Tour update of the week, where Jason Day won the RBC Canadian Open, and
how does Snedeker do?
Bobby picked Snedeker in our DraftKings pool this week, and he didn't play. He was a scratch.
Oh, my hip hurts, he said.
So Bobby was out. I won it. I won it this week with a team of Jason Day, Matt Kuchar, Scott Langley, Andres Romero, Luke Donald, Austin Connolly, who withdrew in the 4th round due to a medical issue.
Yeah.
And Rhett came in second.
Nice.
So sweet winnings for me this week. We'll be back at it for the Quicken Loans. But let's talk about Jason Day's win. It was, I thought it was a great scene. If anybody watched this on 18, when Day made the birdie to get two clear of the guys behind him, and they were watching him, and they showed the view from behind them in the fairway, looking at Day make the thing. I mean, that is just great stuff, don't you think? Did you get to watch that, Dennis?
Yeah, definitely. It was awesome. I even saw Bubba. I thought that was a great shot on his iron shot coming in on 18, and he pulls out, what was it, a 3-wood or something like that, and was trying to hack it out. And
He got up and down.
Yeah, yeah, he needed to make it. Yeah. But how many guys on tour, when they need to make a chip of some kind, pull out a – I mean, I know the lie was bad, but still, I –
It popped up and out and rolled right up to the hole. I mean, he had, what, a foot left. I don't know. Sometimes it's tough to really gauge what kind of lie they have.
Yeah.
Because you can see it with the camera, but you can't always even – you can't really feel it. Is it firm ground? Is it – how tight is it to the earth underneath the grass?
Right.
Just shows how good these guys are, though. I mean, how many – I mean, I know it's obvious and it goes without saying, but how many times – you know, you need to make a chip and he's got the guts to pull out a 3-wood and chop down on it and just let it pop. It's awesome. So cool.
So it was Day's fourth win on the tour this year. He's age 27, and that puts him behind only two players when it comes to wins under the age of 30, and that's Rory McIlroy with 11. Sometimes we forget how many he's got. And Jordan Spieth with 5, but Spieth a lot younger.
Yeah.
So by the he may end up with more wins by age 30 than either one of those guys. He may have more than them combined, but also Day might be ready to break through because he averaged 321 yards off the tee. And that was the longest average ever since ShotLink was introduced in 2003.
Wow.
So for 12 years of PGA Tour golf, 320 yards, 1 yard was the longest average off the tee.
He's not a big guy either, is he?
I don't know. He kind
of seems 5'9"?
I thought he's taller
than
that.
Maybe he's a touch taller than that, but he's not very big.
I thought he's a 6'2"-ish guy.
Really?
That's what I assumed or thought.
I'd like to know.
One of my biggest takeaways from Oak Hill was watching him swing a golf club, and he makes it look effortless, and they all do, but, man, he attacks the golf ball. Like you said, he's a decent-sized guy, but his swing speed, how high he finishes, he was one of those guys, at least – You see all these guys look great, but at Oak Hill when I saw him, I was like, wow. You could pick him out of a crowd from 300 yards away, his swing. And, you know, obviously got enough talent to win a major. Just a matter of time. He's entering the prime of his career.
Yeah, him and Dustin Johnson both are the two most likely candidates probably to win one, win the next major, the PGA maybe, which we'll talk about in a couple weeks here. But, you know, Day was – also the only player in the field whose average approach shot into the par fours was less than 130 yards. On average, Jason Day had 129 yards, and next was Bubba Watson with 132. The field average was 148. That's a big difference. And it's no coincidence that those guys were 1-2. I mean, you talk about putting make it being the most important thing, but when you can hit it as far as these guys, much farther than the other guys, and they're having... You know, wedges in and...
Flip wedges.
Yeah, really. Them. Yeah. It's a huge advantage. So, next week they'll be at the Quicken Loans National at Robert Trent Jones Golf Course in Gainesville, Virginia. And then it's on to the Bridgestone, which is... I think it's Bridgestone's right up there with the Players' Championship in terms of prestige of a tournament. What a great field they'll have at Bridgestone. And then it's the PGA Championship... at Whistling Straits. Hey, subscribe and like our podcast on YouTube. You can click the red button below. Give us a little thumbs up, too. Appreciate that. If you're watching on YouTube, we're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher.com. We're on the FingerLakes1.com app, which is free at the Android or Apple Store. All these links, our latest episodes, and complete archives are online at FingerLakes1.tv/golfpod. And that, my friends, brings us to Bobby's Pick of the Week.
Bobby's Pick of the Week.
All right, Bob. And there it is.
R15 this week, TaylorMade. This is my newest club. I just put it in the bag with the help of Dennis picking the shaft out for me. And I'm in absolutely love with it. Hitting it great. Hitting more fairways and anywhere from 10 to 20 yards longer with it.
More fairways.
More fairways.
10 to 20 yards longer.
Absolutely.
And it's didn't change anything about your swing. You just snagged the new driver. You didn't swing different when you got that new driver?
No. No. I'm coming from the TaylorMade slider. The differences between this and the TaylorMade is somewhat obvious if you're familiar with the slider, but you have the two weights compared to the one, and they've moved the weight, the actual slider portion, up closer to the face on the driver. I'm sure there's some other differences that can't be easily seen, but
Dennis talked you into this, right?
Yes.
So, Denny, why don't you tell us about the driver, Denny?
Well, I got one, too, and I like it a lot. But what it all comes down to with I say, all these drivers is the shaft. And did, you know, a lot of homework on just reading blogs and talked to the rep and his suggestions on something that was a mid-kick stiff in that 60-gram range. And settled on, is it a?
It's the Rogue.
Rogue.
It's the Rogue shaft. It was one of the hottest shafts on tour last year. It's a Rogue 95 MSI by Aldila. Is that how you pronounce it, Aldila?
Aldila, yeah. So it's, for TaylorMade, I think, a classic-looking head. You see TaylorMade drivers now. There's got racing stripes on them. Yep. The way I look at that, it looks like a Titleist. It looks like a traditional Ping. It sets up really square, like Bobby had said. That's the TP model.
Mm-hmm.
460 head, which is a little weird. It's the special, I don't know if this is technically a special edition, but the black head, I think, looks great. But again, Bobby and I, another interesting point, the TP head is a 460. They didn't make a 430 TP head in the black. Maybe they would for, you know, Jason Day or, right. I'm sure they would do it for them, but just something rolling off their line. But yeah, glad to hear you're hitting it well, and
absolutely.
I think that shaft has a lot to do with it. I think that's it's a pretty sweet shaft.
I agree. I think I could probably take this shaft and maybe, you know, possibly put it in the slider and have similar results.
That would be interesting. You know, if you got the shaft
is so important.
Well, your main problem with the slider was you hit it so high.
Yeah, a lot of spin.
And you think that's because of the shaft?
Oh yeah,
kick point difference or something like that.
Yeah, I'm sure the kick point on that was much lower. So, I mean, when I first talked to Dennis about this, we specifically set out with the goal to reduce spin and have a lower launch, and we've done that.
Success.
Mm-hmm.
Nice job, Daddy.
It's good, yeah. It's tough. You know, ideally you want to get fit with the TrackMan, so anytime you're...
I think we got lucky.
Oh, you know, definitely got a little lucky. Yeah, yeah. But,
but it was, you know, it was worth a shot. We don't have the luxury of having a TrackMan, you know, to sit there and monkey around with and throw different shafts in. So sometimes you gotta take a guess and hope it's right. It could be it's an expensive guess, but sometimes you strike gold and you get it right.
On Sunday, I was playing ahead of Bobby in the first hole at Seneca Falls. It's drivable. It's kind of shortish, what, about 280?
Mm-hmm.
And I knew Bob had the new driver for the first time. And I was coming off the second tee, and Bobby's ball was over the green on one on the other side of the cart path. And I said, "Is that your drive?" And he goes, "Yeah, yeah." And he goes, "No, no, no. It was the second shot."
It was. Yeah, it was.
So, Dennis, tell us about the new driver you have on order.
It's on order. It's Titleist. It's this new line they have, MOTO, made only to order. They have... traditionally the D2 and the D3. This would be the D4. So it's something that only was available to tour guys. They built it, I believe, for Adam Scott. I believe Adam Scott uses it, Graham Dillette, a couple other guys. So it's a 450cc head. So it's a touch smaller head, sets up very square. But it is working off of, really, they're copying TaylorMade. They are going a super low spin head, pairing it with you know, a low spin shaft, you're going to pick out with it. Mm-hmm. So for guys that traditionally would play a cut, someone who wanted to just kill spin, Titleist drivers, in my mind, I had a Titleist driver before my slider, before the R15, and the spin rates were just crazy high. When I got the slider, it cut it down significantly, almost a third of the spin. Mm-hmm. And I saw initially some good results. So hopefully I can put it in play and have the same results. I've been hitting the driver really poorly this year, so have the same results as Bob has had.
Yeah, I got a new Titleist driver, 915. Is that right? I don't even see. I'm so opposite of you guys when it comes to the clubs. I can't even remember what.
I think you got a D3, I thought, or something like that.
Well, my the one I bought new last year.
That was a 913.
913? Okay. And, you know, I went away from it. I got a new shaft in it, though, earlier this year. And, you know, I might pull it out and see what happens. But, boy, I'm hitting my real driver good.
Yeah, you're hitting it fine. I wouldn't touch it.
But I was, you know, I maybe 20 yards behind some of the guys we're playing with that hit it good. Yeah. But, yeah, that doesn't really bother me that much. Well, I was
Zach Johnson's behind a lot of guys, too.
That's true. That's true. But I really feel like I got a good command over where I'm going. And I can draw it or cut it, which I like. So, you know, if it's not broken, don't fix it. Mm-hmm. Of course, I can do that, you know, but I can't make a 3-foot putt, which kind of ruins everything. Hey, let's look at some local golf news.
Alrighty.
The New York State Men's Am at Guyute, Denny, how do you pronounce that? Anybody, Bobby?
I think you had it really
close. Guyute. At Turning Stone. It's we talked earlier in the year about why they selected that course over Shenandoah or Dunhill for the New York State Am at Turning Stone. But, you know, talking to head pro over Eric Lorenzetti over there at Turning Stone, he said, you know, you're not talking about you and Bobby going over, me and Bobby going over to play that course. You're talking about the best players in the state. So it's obviously not that as difficult for someone that is hitting better golf shots than maybe we did when we played it. Mm-hmm. So, hey, guess who won? Trevor Sluman, nephew of Jeff Sluman, native of Pittsburgh. He came to the par 3 15th tee at Guyute at Turning Stone, nursing a one-stroke lead in the final round of the 93rd New York State Men's Am. And he finished birdie, par, bogey, par during Thursday's final round to give him a 2-over-par 74 and a 72-hole total of 4-under-par. Good enough for a 2-stroke victory over Sam Bernstein of the Century Club in Westchester County and Adam Condello of Locust Hill, also in Pittsburgh. So congratulations, Trevor Sluman, big name winning the State Am. And Sam Bernstein playing at Century Club. I caddied at Century Club a while back in Westchester. And Ben Hogan, former pro at the Century Club.
Really?
Awesome. Yeah, and I remember at one point during that round, I had to go off to the side to relieve myself. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of old historic trees, and I thought to myself, you know, Ben Hogan could have relieved himself on this same tree.
Mm-hmm. True.
But beautiful golf course, obviously, Century Club. So I didn't mean to soil the hollow grounds that Ben Hogan walked on. How about a CNY PGA update? Dennis Colligan won the Central New York PGA Stroke Play Championship at Mark Twain Golf Course last Monday, shooting a 2-round total of -9, defeating Eric Manning in a playoff. Kevin Savage finished at third at -6, and Mark Tucker was next at -4. Speaking of Mark Tucker, head professional at Cazenovia Country Club, also won the Central New York Senior Championship at Bellevue Country Club on Thursday of last week. Tucker went out in 31. Under ideal conditions to start the second round and pulled to within one shot of first-round leader and defending champ Rob Phelps after 27 holes. He then started his final 9 holes, birdie, birdie, eagle, to take the lead and finished with a 64 and finished the tournament at -4. Phelps finished second at 1-over, and they both qualified for the 27th Senior PGA Professional National Championship October 15th and 18th at Bayonet and Black Horse in Seaside, California, along with Eric Manning and Bernie Herseg. Earlier today, they were at Radisson Greens for the fourth event in the Turning Stone Pro-Am Series. So we'll have those results next week, or you can go to cny.pga.com, and they're probably posted by now. Congratulations to the folks over at Geneva Country Club. They have one of the best views around of Seneca Lake, and they've recently completed a $50,000 renovation to the interior of their clubhouse. And Bob, being a member guest champion over there, that inside of that clubhouse was in need of an upgrading, but what a beautiful view. Oh, yeah. I want to get over there and see what they did.
It's a fantastic view over there.
And holes in one finally here to round out the local golf news. Got a few. Ned May got a hole in one on the 130-yard 13th hole at Millstone using an 8-iron. Al LaWoosh aced the 165-yard 13th hole at Clifton Springs Country Club using a 7-iron. Also at Clifton Springs, Joan Rhodes used a hybrid to ace the 137-yard 7th hole. Tony Procopio scored a hole in one on the 160-yard 17th at Cobblestone Creek and Victor using a 7-iron. Bob, you're familiar with that course, one of your favorites. Heather Clemens aced the 104-yard 12th hole at Sodus Bay Heights using an 8-iron. Ron Wheeler aced the 180-yard 2nd hole on Webster Golf Course Club's East Course using a 4 hybrid. Tom Tom Sillett used a 6-iron to score a hole-in-1 on the 140-yard 14th hole at Ontario Country Club up there in Wayne. Pat O'Hara aced the 125-yard 8th hole at Bristol Harbor using an 8-iron. And Matt Beadnell aced the 156-yard 7th hole at Bellevue Country Club using a pitching wedge. And we know Matt Beadnell is the guy we scoff with at Seneca Falls Country Club.
Yep.
So congratulations, Matt, on that ace at Bellevue. And you remember, send us your hole-in-1s to contact at fingerlakes1.com, subject line FL. Ex-golfer, and we'll be sure to read them on the air. Well, time for the Zen tip of the week here. And we can't properly get into it without playing the intro.
All right.
Zen tip of the week.
Zen tip of the week. Promised off the start of this podcast that we'd be talking about the two-man scramble at Seneca Falls Country Club. Dennis played in it, too, with Doug Brown and his face on putter. Remember the names of the champs, Dennis?
Carpenter and last name that I struggled to pronounce with a P. Palmesto? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, that does sound Palmesto, right. Carpenter. I should have written it down.
Yeah.
63 was the number.
We should have remembered. 63 is a pretty good number. So they definitely earned it for sure.
So two under par, nine under par, 63 won the tournament. Bob and I shot 68. I think you and Doug shot 68 as well, right?
Yes.
That's right. 68, which, you know, a lot of people don't got to understand the difference between a two-man scramble and a four-man scramble is big time, you know. Four under par is a solid round. And, you know, two-man scramble. We wanted to be better. It seemed like we should have been better, but we also didn't make a single bogey. And bogeys are easy to make in two-man scrambles. But the reason this is our Zen tip of the week is we started our round. We were playing in a six-um, and we got off to a slow start. The first hole at the club is pretty easy. You almost got to birdie it, right? You guys birdie it, Dennis?
Yes.
Yeah, almost said, well, Bob and I didn't. Guys were playing with, the two groups we're playing with got off to a much better start than we did. And so by the time we were about, you know, six holes in, a third of the round done, we were three shots down to one team, two shots down to another. And I think, Bob, we did a good job of continuing to play, you know, as if we were three shots up. You know, we just kept doing the best we could. We didn't ever go in the bag. We missed a lot of putts. It was frustrating to miss the putts, but you know what? We stepped up to the next hole, and even, Bob, after we missed about a four-footer on 15 for birdie, we were only two under at the time, and we were five shots back of the one group, guys in our group, and three or four of the other. With only three holes left, it seemed impossible to reach our goal, which was six under. We said, if we get six under, we're probably going to be in the mix. But what did we do? We came out to the hardest hole in the golf course after hitting our two worst drives of the day and having about 220 in. Mm-hmm. We both hit great shots into the green and made birdie on 16. Mm-hmm. And then on the green on 17, really tried to make that putt as we did every putt, mm-hmm. Unsuccessful. And then on to 18, birdie 18. So we birdied two out of the last three. We shot four under. And two of those unders came on the last three holes. And I just think we should be proud of ourselves, Bob. Yeah,
for sure. I agree.
Because we saved a lot of money on side bets.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. Not only that, but it was pretty frustrating as far as putting. There was a few par threes where we were well inside our playing partners, and we had great opportunities to score.
And pick up a stroke on them.
But we were just burning cups. And it's easy after a while to just say, you know what, it's just not going to happen today, but, you know, we'll just go through the motions and get out of here, go home, and
I'm gonna throw a few bogeys on the car on the way in and shoot a 72 or something, instead of a 68.
Right.
So we saved a little face, I guess. I was worried heading into this tournament, though, Bob. I've been putting so bad. I was worried about, and maybe this is one reason why we didn't putt so bad, because I was worried I was gonna putt so bad, and you had me putting first. We swapped it after a while, mm-hmm. but I just was afraid that you were gonna watch me miss putt after putt. Including some short ones, you know, 2 or 3 footers. I was afraid I was going to probably be once or twice I left you with one of those. And so that was what I was kind of nervous about. And I guess it kind of came true, but I don't know if that's why you didn't. We both made a couple. But yeah. Dennis, how about your round out there in the two-man? Same story, a lot of missed putts?
Yeah, we just couldn't really get in a rhythm. And then we birdied one, birdied two. Felt like we had something going a little bit, and then
it was a shotgun start, so you got to those holes about four or five holes in.
Yeah, about halfway through the round, and we thought we could get it going, catch fire, and then we made both missed a 4-footer on 3 and made bogey on 3.
Which so you hit that shot to 4 feet, and you're like, sweet, we're gonna make a third birdie.
Right, yeah, we both missed the green, but we thought both hit. You know, you figure one of us is gonna make it, pretty straightforward putt that we know what it's gonna do, and we both just didn't hit good putts, and that kind of brought us back down to just seemed to not be able to hit it close enough with our second shots to really give ourselves a really good chance.
A reasonable chance.
Right. So we just kept knocking it to 15, 20 feet and burning the cup, but it just never got it going. But our playing partners, Harry and Steve Hyde, played great. Mm-hmm. We thought they had a chance. They chipped in from the bunker on 12, which is short par three. Chipped in there.
Where was their other shot that they had to take the bunker shot?
Harry hit it about 40 yards off the tee.
Chunked
it.
Really? Not one of his best shots.
And then goes from that to short sided left. So the pin was tucked left. He had probably, what do you think, 3 yards to work with. One of the best shots. Yeah. Go from hitting a terrible shot to one of the best shots I've ever seen him hit.
Right.
And they had definitely had it going there for a little bit. Bogey 13, which killed them. Mm-hmm. But it was a good time out there.
Yeah,
it was the second of the scratch series events at Seneca Falls Country Club. Another one coming up on September 26th. Another one coming up end of October. Details online at SenecaFallsCountryClub.com. But hey, I'm not really ready to stop talking about this tournament yet. Because we have about 8 minutes left in the show, mm-hmm. and it's the last thing I have on the agenda. But you know, we played a lot of two man scramble lately. We played at Dutch last weekend, I just think it's a great format because par still means something. You mentioned those guys bogeyed 13, and did I ask you already if you guys had any bogeys?
3 was our.
You had both through the third hole. The 4-footer you missed was for par.
Correct. Yeah. Yep.
We flirted with a bogey.
We sure did, by our own doing.
Yeah, 14, we par had a 5, shot.
Went we for it.
Probably 230 out.
230 probably out,
230 out, and...
pond in front of the green, probably had about 205 to carry.
Right, and I felt pretty confident. I was hitting first, so I pulled my 3-wood out. Hit it. Really bad left, right?
No, you hit it right at the hole. But hit it a little short. Chunky.
Yeah, it was short. Went in the pond. So, you know, that's not looking good. And then I don't know if we
had... We're 5 shots back of Booty and Rutsy, the 2 of the guys in our group. Yeah. And so you know, we talked about it. And what I said was, I didn't think that it was that risky of a play because I was going to hit my hybrid, which I can easily carry 200 yards.
Right.
So I was like, I just got to hit a good shot here. And, you know, and then we'll have an eagle putt or at least be chipping. And I hooked it into the woods.
It was true risk reward, right? So, and my exact words were the Jim, you know what? If you hit it in the water, we still got a decent shot to get up and down, get a par, and get out of here. It's risk reward. You know what? So, you know, maybe we get a shot at eagle. If you know, if it's far, you know, if it's a long putt, we're going to get a birdie out of it. And there's a
skins game, obviously, a nice big skins game.
Right. So, didn't turn out in our favor, but we did get up and down for a par.
We did. We knocked a wedge up, and Bobby made the putt right off the bat.
I don't remember who made the putt, but.
But we saved the par.
We saved the par.
And then we get to 15, and we have 55 yards into the pin, yep. You know, wedge, and we hit it to 4 or 5 feet. And we both missed the putt.
Yep.
And then the next hole, like I mentioned, we hit your drive. Bob's drive went into the woods.
Yeah.
And we didn't even see was that it popped out back in the middle of the fairway, but it was back about probably 350 in.
Yeah.
And my ball, I tugged it left and it got cut up in the high grass there and didn't go very far. We had about 230 in.
Yeah. Yep.
And to a front right pin. And we both hit just pretty much amazing shots.
Great,
you know,
shots, yeah.
Both on the green. And then we make a putt, and that's how we make a birdie.
Yeah.
That's why golf's a crazy game. You just can never give up because you never know what's going to happen.
Right, yeah.
And you never know what the winning score is going to be either. You know, or in this place, we paid second, third, fourth place. You know, you don't know if
we could have been looking at third at that point, or we could have you know, did enough to take second.
You know, which we weren't. We finished in middle of the pack. Would you say 68 was middle of the pack, Danny?
Yep. Yeah, about that. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said, all importantly, basically pushed our side bets. Won a few, lost a few, but it basically was a push, which is softens the blow a little bit.
Yep.
So it was a great event, and got some events coming up. What's on your golf calendar, Bob? Member guest, right?
Member guest Saturday.
Yeah, at Seneca Falls.
Yep, at Seneca Falls. What is that, 1 o'clock?
Go out in the morning, play 27.
27 holes.
27 holes, yep.
Yep. So we got that in the morning, and then what's the next tournament after that that's on my schedule?
Club Championship Cup Qualifier coming up.
Yep.
Our club championship.
Probably, we've also
Cash Bonanza.
No, Stroke Play. We're still working out. Right?
Yep. Stroke Play the 15th.
So lots of golf. Soon we'll be talking about fall golf.
Yeah. Yep. Fall golf always. That's my favorite.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to hurry up and get here.
No, it doesn't. No, we don't want it to come too quick. We got El Nino this year, so all you golfers out there, if El Nino strikes hard on the West Coast, we'll have a mild winter, so you might be able to play every month through the winter.
Really? Like January?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's happened in the past.
Well, we deserve it after what we've been through recently around here. Hey, Dennis, thanks for coming back up here again. Sometime between now and the end of the season, we need to do... When that new driver comes in, we got to get it up here. So we'll have you back in a couple weeks.
Excited to see it. It's something that, you know,
unique. Off.
Yeah, I don't know. It's cool.
So we'll take a look at that. And of course, you can go see Dennis down at Seneca Falls Country Club. He's a general manager. You can stop down there, call for tee times, go to the website, go to golfnow.com, go to senecafallscountryclub.com, book online, come down and play at Seneca Falls. Say hello to Dennis. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have told me, who's that tall guy? Who's that tall guy I saw down there? It's like, who was working when you went down to play? Oh, the tall guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's Dennis. Come on. Show some respect. Learn his name.
Yep, exactly.
Bob, thanks again for another great episode.
Thank you.
And I really did enjoy being your partner. That was the first time we've ever been partners in a tournament, and it was fun. We really stayed focused and played, and there's no nonsense, really.
Could have been different, but...
Maybe it will be next time.
Yep.
Maybe it will be next time. And speaking of next time, next week, Rhett Taccone will be back in studio to help us review some of these sweet Lynx Soul shirts that we've got. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, I wore mine for 36 holes last week. on Sunday during mm-hmm. the, because we played before the scramble too, mm-hmm. and held up well, felt great, felt fresh, even smelled good after that, and it was a hot day.
Yeah.
What can I say about the Lynx Soul? We'll talk all about that next week and show you a lot about their 2015 lineup. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher.com. Email us at contact@fingerlakes1.com. Send us your local golf photos or videos or events at your home course. We'd love to talk about them here on the show. And we're online at fingerlakes1.tv/golfpod. So hope you had a great time hanging out with us for episode number 33 of the Finger Lakes Golfer Podcast. We'll be back live next Monday at 9 p.m. Until then, hit 'em long, not often.
Great local content like this by becoming a patron of FingerLakes1.com. Visit patreon.com/FL1. FingerLakes1.com.